All right, I'm Chairman Brad Holton. I'll bring the meeting back to order. We have a 10:30 agenda item and it's for DSD general business and we will be continuing from last week. So Sabrina, you want to set the stage for today?
Sure. Mr. Chair and Commissioners, thank you. This is a continuation of our discussions about what is agriculture in terms of a usable definition here in Canyon County. And then where does it apply? I think what we realized from seeing all the good work that Emily did is that there are multiple terms throughout both our ordinances and state law that apply in different ways. So the follow-up here really is related to Title 63, Chapter 6, which is in the assessor's world, about how how agriculture and agriculture exempts are determined. Part of why we wanted to bring this in is our request to the assessor, who was great to come in here and talk with us, is that this statute is also used in the new state statute for their agricultural planning areas. And so we have been discussing how much of this can be used as somewhat of a proxy for some of the work that we do in Chapter 7 with non-viables, both with zoning, what does it look like? So that was the extent of our knowledge of this code. So we thought we'd invite in the experts, talk about what it means in their world, and then we can follow up together with some recommendations of does it or doesn't it apply in the land use world, besides the state law that requires it, and what does that look like? And we know that there may be further questions. So that's why we asked our honorable assessor to be here.
Honorable.
He asked his really people who know the details to be here too. So we'll let you guys introduce yourself for the record and then maybe just give an overview and then we'll go to questions.
Okay, all right.
Greg Himes, and I guess the new chief deputy, I almost got that one wrong. And I think I'm gonna give the synopsis of 63604. And I don't think Brian needs any introductions. No. I've given classes and done training, and I think it's easier if you just want to go through this directly from Idaho Code. And the number one thing, and it's already highlighted up there, is this is just for property tax purposes.
So for the record, Jenin, would you be sure that there's a PDF of this state statute on our record?
Yep.
All right, thanks.
So the first part, if you just read down to A, the ag exemption or ag use, that's titled both, and I think Brian will get into that. I still old school and call it ag exemption. It breaks it down into two different sections. One that's over 5 acres and then those that are 5 acres and below. So the over 5 acres is your A, and then there's three letters, the I guess there's four now. If any one of those is met, then it qualifies for the ag exemption, and I will continue to call it ag exemption even though it's ag use in the code. So the very first one, it's used to produce field crops. That's pretty easy. You're harvesting some sort of field crop, some, you know, everything from beets to grass hay to, you know, anything and everything in between. But we do look at the harvest. We want to make sure that it's being harvested.
Chairman, that word is not specifically listed in there, but I know that it is specifically tied to the ability to receive the exemption. They have to have some type of machine in there. Can you expand on that at all?
Raise your hand. You got it.
Oh, sorry. I was thinking that would be. So this other code section in 2020, the legislature changed it from being an ag exemption to valuation by use. So we no longer categorize the full market value of land that's actively devoted to ag. It's just valued by use. And we used to show that as an exempt amount on the abstract. Because, you know, each exemption shifts the tax burden other places, right?
Right.
So when that changed, we don't report that exemption anymore, or we're not required to report that exemption anymore. So thus, all we report is the total category value of ag ground. So there is no exemption anymore, per se. It's just valued by use, which is capitalize the land rent and come up with a value.
So they don't have, I'm sorry, I'm still confused, but they don't have to actually harvest the crop then?
Okay, sorry, so that's a different portion, yeah.
Okay. And I was, okay.
Yeah, I thought that's what you were going to answer. Yeah. So even though the terminology is not in there, to be ag ground, we do require some sort of harvesting. And I was going to let Brian have this statement, but it nowhere in here does it say you have to be a good farmer. It's just we're looking at the ground, we're looking at the crop, and making sure that something's harvested. There's a little spot if you go down farther. It's not part of this section right here, but it talks about profit making.
Yep.
So you can't have a true ag exemption if you're not selling a crop.
Yeah. And Chairman, the reason that this is important to me is because I do have career farmers call me. They know that we have farmed, and he's well connected with people that are into large scale farming. So they will see plots of ground where they've planted, and to your point, maybe may not irrigate it. It might struggle to be a good stand of something. And so to have the assurance to the farmers that deserve that exemption, because that's what's in place, I think is important. But to be able to ensure that people that are using that for a different purpose that are not granted that exemption, I think that's a good distinction to make. And I know you guys follow that. There are pieces of ground in the county that you are on site looking to see if there is a harvest taking place. So it looks like, Cesar, you have something to say.
Commissioner Rumbey, I share your concern with those. It's something that we track. I believe the ag exemption is truly for pieces of property that are generating crops that feed us or feed the animals that we live off of. And we do put extensive time into monitoring properties' statuses around the county to ensure that the person that is actually putting in the effort, irrigating, fertilizing, and truly harvesting and doing everything that, in our opinion, is actively devoted to agriculture and attempting to make a profit, that they deserve to be valued by ag. So we are very, very concerned as well.
And thank you. This is probably, we're going to put it in the parking lot, but one of the land use hearings that we recently had, there's confliction in the ordinance that we have regarding profitability or non-profitability. So harvesting, most viable businesses do it for a profit. In some instances, there might be an advantage to taking a loss as a tax write-off on a piece of ground. So somewhere we're going to have to reconcile those two in our comprehensive plan. And I know that's a bigger discussion, but we're tripping on certain pieces of language in the 2030 comp plan that we're trying to figure out how to wrestle through, is my point.
Mr. Chair, commissioners, maybe as a clarification, the section about profitability, is that only for under 5 acres or is that for above that? Just because that might help clarify.
We're going to get to that. It's okay. Actually in the above 5 acres.
Above 5 acres, yeah. Of the profitability.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
So I think we hit I well enough. The II is it's used to produce nursery stock, and this is not greenhouse nurseries. This is like in, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but in Jim County, Baxter Tree Farm, which is hundreds of acres of growing nursery trees, and then they go to a greenhouse or a nursery commercial situation. But that one's pretty, I mean, self-explanatory. The for-profit enterprise is in the next section, or the next III, where it talks about grazing of livestock to be sold as part of a for-profit enterprise. And then there's also the or leased by the owner to a bona fide lessee for grazing purposes. So really it comes down to, if you're over 5 acres and you grow a crop, or you legitimately have a lease and you're leasing the ground out, or you have enough livestock to be part of a for-profit enterprise, then all of those things qualify you as ag use. Or each individually qualify you as ag use. So in the over 5 acres, I mean, that's really the big thing. You can also, in the four, where it's in a cropland retirement or rotation program, we make that a specific program. It's not just a farmer saying that, well, I didn't grow anything this year because I didn't want to. Or it has to be a specific program. Again, I've thrown this out there a couple times. I'm a little old school, so it used to be the ASCS office. I think it maybe is SCS now, Soil Conservation Service. They have specific programs that you can be a part of where you maybe don't grow something every year. And if you're part of that specific program, you can still qualify for the ag exemption.
Also, another caveat in that is if you sign up for a habitat improvement program, which you assign your ground into a wildlife program to promote game birds and stuff to repopulate, that also qualifies.
Yeah. So, Chairman, it sounds like we would want to make sure that we have a reference somewhere, because our ordinance says that you can't just let the ground lie fallow. So, knowing the difference in a land use request where the ground has not been farmed, the maps might show that, but there could be a reason behind it that's tied. So lots of tentacles on this, I guess, is what I'm saying.
So say that here's why we're wanting it. Here's why I'm wanting this discussion, is that we have developers that are in the middle of a multi-year development, and they have houses on one part of this land, and they have disturbed the ground to a large extent to start putting in infrastructure such as water and perhaps sewer, telephone, curbs and gutters, drainage to a common drain area. And they want to go out and they want to drill that with wheat or oats. There's no physical way to irrigate it, and they want the ag exemption. So can we talk about that one? Because we're having that in our face, as well as the person who is before us, the applicant that's before us, who has taken the ag exemption for years, may or may not have taken off a crop every year, and suddenly that ground's non-viable farm ground when they come before us and they want to change the use. And so we're in a quandary that one part of county government is recognizing it as a productive piece of farm ground, and they're receiving a tax consideration for it. And on the other hand, at the exact same time, they're coming before this board saying, well, this piece of ground is worthless, and its best and highest use is to put houses on it. So that's why I'm exploring this morning, because I feel that that's convoluted to come before the board and have it both ways at the same time.
Good. So Chairman Holton, a couple points you made in there. Greg alluded to it earlier that he cut me off and jumped in quick. Idaho Code, for our world, it doesn't outline anywhere that you have to be a good farmer. It just says that you have to make, the intent is to make a profit. So I understand your concerns on that point. Wholeheartedly, we look at stuff, and you actually, if you plant wheat, then you also need to harvest that wheat or bale it, and it gets fed to cows, you know, something on that end. So on that end, our world, it would take a code change that says you have to have 50% of the minimum fertilizer applied, you have to have 3 allotments of water delivered at a minimum. There needs more teeth in it for us to not allow an ag exemption based upon non-typical farming practices. I guess is how I would say that. The other one is, you talk about someone speaks to the point where it, the highest and best use would be homes. In our world, we're a little different. Our world, we're related. We appraise to the actual and functional use should be a major concern. If you look at 63208, I've highlighted it here for you. In this code, actual and functional use shall be a major consideration when determining market value for assessment purposes. So it could be zoned residential, it could be zoned industrial. If they're actually farming it, they will receive an ag exemption. We, in the downturn, we had multiple subdivisions where they went in and they drilled grain in, and we actually had people that hauled in irrigation pipes, connected them, and they were running hand lines through developed subdivisions. You'd go out there and you'd see the pipe running across the road that was already put in, and they were actually growing a fair crop.
Okay.
So on our world, we're governed by actual and functional use.
Okay.
So
Chairman, can I ask, would you repeat the part that you said about the wildlife? I didn't understand that.
That's actually, it's farther
down. Is it
further
down?
Okay. Yeah, it's in the... I'm not seeing it right offhand.
Chairman, the only reason I was curious is because I don't know what the director would have to say, but I've been involved personally with trying to preserve riparian corridors, wetlands, that kind of a thing, and the governmental agencies, so the what you would think would be regulated by the Idaho state statute. If people belly dump over those, I've had comments from Fish and Game that if you disturb those corridors, it doesn't matter. That it will, they'll just find another place to roost or nest. And where I live along the Boise River, you have everything. You have bald eagles and deer and even the mountain lion we had down there. So it's interesting. It appears there's a lot of conflict and no protection for, people have argued for view sheds, but the riparian corridors, that doesn't seem to gain any traction as a feature to preserve within Canyon County. And there's a lot of it because of the water features that we have. So that's probably another bigger topic, but.
I'm not seeing it in here.
Okay.
It may be in a different section, but it's the Fish and Game Habitat Improvement Program, HIP program. And there's a section of code somewhere that says if they are part of that Habitat Improvement Program, they don't lose their ag exemption.
Okay.
It was in the ag previously.
Yeah.
And as you're saying, I mean, it's just preserving natural grasses and coverage and habitat. I mean, it's in the explanation of the title, Habitat Improvement Program.
And that might become important, Chairman, if the Greenbelt Project proceeds west from Ada County, so there's an inter-county partnership there in what that might look like for either walking paths. The introduction of anything human down there is going to change the nature and the scope of what that looks like in Canyon County. It's a large section.
As Greg's presenting, I'll look for it. And if we can't find it, we'll...
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. 5 acres, are we fairly clear on at least our section for property tax purposes?
Okay.
So then we move to the 5 acre and under, and that's B. And the first I letter is it's got to agriculturally produce for sale or home consumption the equivalent of 15% or more of the owner's or leasee's annual gross income. I'm not sure, as long as I've been doing that, I've ever had anybody apply under that section. Normally, we just go to two, and has it produced gross revenues in the immediate preceding year of $1,000? That's normally what we hang our hat on, and the owner hangs their hat on. It, going back quite a few years, it was a net, and I don't remember the reason why, but at some point they changed it from net to gross.
Well, they did. Yeah.
So it's just a specific to gross. There's other little small things, and we could hit those if you want, but really, I mean, that's, for us, that's the majority of how you qualify for an ag exemption.
Do they, okay, do you ever have debates? So that's basically $200 average gross income per acre, but that is never applied up on A then?
No, it's never applied to A.
Somebody could argue that one. That's interesting. Okay.
It's just profit making.
Right.
There are a lot of gray areas, and we would like to get it defined a little better, but we're always hesitant to take any of this stuff to legislature because it seems like what comes out is not what you went in to begin with.
Right.
So, and Brian did highlight number three, which is a big one for us, and it creates a lot of heartache, but land not to be classified or valued as ag land, which is part of a platted sub, and with stated restrictions prohibiting its use for ag purposes. So if it's specific in that sub that you can't have ag, then you can't get it. And I thought you were going to highlight number four. That's the one that can be a killer. It's land utilized for the grazing of a horse or other animal kept primarily for personal use or pleasure, as rather than the bona fide profit making venture.
Right.
Yeah. And again, that's somewhat gray. We tend to say that you have to have more than one 4-H cow on your property. Mm-hmm. It needs to be, I think we use 5 AUMs. We typically try and use that as the break-even point. And whatever that 5 AUMs translates, I think that is...
Zach, do you see that it would complicate land use matters if we reference some of this standards from the taxation over into the land use? Is it a slippery slope for us, or is it being consistent?
I think it would. I mean, there's some potential for them to relate, I think. I think our issue is that our sort of default zoning is ag. You know, if something is not, something has to be moved out of ag. That's sort of how our plan is based. You don't have to meet a certain criteria to get into ag. But we could, and I'm thinking particularly in the non-viable parcels, that sort of thing, we could maybe tie some of this in. There's certainly room to play around with it, although I'm not sure directly where it would apply.
All right.
Mr. Chair, if I may add to that, commissioners, one of the increasing complexities to it is the new state law for the APA actually references agricultural production consistent with, and it cites this code, which is ironic because as you started, it was for property tax purposes. But now we have another one, another part of the code that's the APA Act talking about preserving for 20 years agricultural production that's citing this. So I think it is an opportunity to look at components of this for consistency. Like Zach said, having a default is ag. One of the other options that we'll talk more about in a week or two is we don't have to have that non-viable ag provision. You know, we really can address that through zoning or other ways.
Right.
So that those are some options. I think that we've made it more complicated also. So getting a clear definition that isn't inconsistent, but also maybe goes into more details of what's the process, might help, and we'll talk more about that. But that's why we wanted to see it, is it does add this complexity of one part of what the ordinance we're going to have to pass directly references it.
Chairman? Go ahead. I just wanted to, and I don't care if we park the question until you have your thoughts out there, but can you clarify on the 20 years? Because I don't think we're looking at holding that to 20 years. That's still voluntary, right, on the dedication of that. Do you see that ever moving as a, okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Commissioners, yeah, we are going to come back and talk more about it. Aaron and I have been working on a draft what the county ordinance looks like.
Okay.
Legal, but it is voluntary, but the issue is if the county approves that application for the APA, it is mm-hmm. 20 years. So it is voluntary, somebody applies, but if we approve it, it is for 20 years, and you can't make zoning changes or other laws to affect it. So it does have an implication, even if it is voluntary. And for this purposes, because we will talk more about that, it directs back to what is agricultural production by this law. So that's the interesting part.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
You were going to say something.
Sabrina, what's APA?
Sorry, Agricultural Production Act. Start at the beginning.
Just so passed.
The one that just
passed. Just passed.
Yes, which we have to create our own ordinance, but we're also trying to make sure that we're consistent with our good land use planning that works for us, of how that works. So that's part of the context, right?
Chairman, do we have any of those areas in Canyon County that are operating legitimately?
Sure, Commissioner, what?
I'm trying to be careful with my statement because I'm trying to figure out how to ask the question on the record, but do we have any areas that are voluntarily protected in Canyon County for that 20 years or a designated period? Do we have anything in perpetuity?
Chair and Commissioners, not at this point, because we're going through the ordinance. Then we'll discuss how and when applications come in and what those criteria are. The county does get to determine that. So not now, because there hasn't been that tool. Now we have that tool, and we have to figure out how it works for us. And that's why it is related back to taxation, as we've got these taxation policies and state laws. We've got another state law that references it, and then we have comprehensive plan and ordinances. So not yet, but this is important context.
I could say some other things, but I won't.
I'm trying to keep saying we will come back to the APA Act, I promise, but it's important to understand the definition part.
Yep. And Chairman, I'm going to say this for the record and carefully, but I would never be in favor of government mandating without volunteer and a fully informed. I can't help that because we're all supposed to be old enough to negotiate our contracts and what we're doing, but I would never be in favor of the government designating that without volunteer support.
And Mr. Chair, Commissioners, not to get further into the AP Act, but it isn't. Somebody has to apply. Then there's that with, you know, then there's the criteria, and the county would approve or disapprove that. So that's kind of the basis. And I know at IAC you're going to hear more about that, and we'll come back and talk about how that fits for us. What's interesting is when we get those applications, this is one of those criteria of how it's defined that is mandated. Like, this is the definition of it, which is, again, what you brought up. It's a little ironic because it does at the beginning say for property tax purposes, but now it's being used for other purposes, which is the part of, like, are there things in here that for land use do make sense, right, so that we can think about what those compatibilities are.
I was involved a little bit in some of that prep work on the APA Act. There was originally an aspect of having some financial ties to it for committing into an area. And then that portion was backed out, so then the assessors were less involved in it. So it may circle back down the road. No, not this time.
Thanks for the clarification.
I laugh because it's in a vague way, you have a parallel course going with wetlands too. You can have people go in and you can help declare themselves as a wetlands area, and then there's all kinds of government controls and what have you on that too. So in a vague way, it's there's other areas of the law that does this with the lands.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Commissioners, I'm not sure kind of whatever else on an overview, but one thing that I would be helpful, if you agree, for our listeners and for us, is to understand a bit more of how people apply for this exemption, how often it's reviewed, and then if the assessor and team feel like, how does it get removed? And when there's land use changes, what does that look like? And that might help lead us to later conversations of better coordination around those.
Sure.
But I'm not sure, at least for myself, the general public, people know, how do you get that? How do you lose that? How often is it looked at? You know, think back to our map. We created a map of just all the ag exempt parcels. When we see change, what happens? And so I don't understand that. Maybe it's something you guys can give a highlight. If you understand it, then I can have an offline conversation. But at your direction.
Wade into it.
So you, okay.
Just what's the application process? Kind of how often is it reviewed? And then how do people either lose it, or is there a change when, let's say, they divide the property or something like that? Just wondering how that kind of works.
There is,
okay.
There is an application process for those that are over 5 acres. You can't lose the ag exemption due to not returning the application or not filling it out. It's really that application process is for us to gather more information, but it's not a requirement. And the reason it's not a requirement is because it outlines right here what you have to do. You either have to grow a crop or you have to graze the property. However, it is outlined specifically in other code. There is an application process for the 5 acres or under, and it's annual. We send that out annually, and if you don't return it and it's 5 acres or under, then you lose the exemption at that point. So they make it much more specific, or the code makes it much more specific and a little bit harder for those properties that are smaller. How does one that's above 5 acres lose its ag exemption? We reappraise 20% of the properties every year. So we're hitting them once every 5 years. And if we see that there's not anything being farmed on that property, then that starts the process of potentially removing the ag exemption. Then there's also, Brian has a few pet peeves, and one of them is not moving those ag parcels that were previously farmed, but now they're being subdivision and they're ground is being moved, and he is actively watching for those, and as well as everybody that's in the assessor's office. So if we see land changes, and we don't care about zoning changes, but if it's the actual land, there's movement of the dirt, there's sewer starting to be put in, then we will start the process on taking the ag exemption off those as well. If a property is a big ag parcel and maybe it gets split a couple of times and a deed comes through, we'll send out another ag form just to make sure that they're still farming. So that's kind of the big overview.
And we have 20 some appraisers, so we're kind of everywhere in the county, and everybody's aware of their areas and other properties that are changing uses throughout the year. So we're constantly monitoring a lot of these parcels.
Yeah. And I guess to add on to that, we have in our computer assisted mass appraisal program, in our appraisal software, there is a memo. It's a note that's put on parcels that are questionable with ag exemptions or that are potentially going to be development land, and those are actually visited, those are looked at every year too.
So at the moment, we have one part of county government and another part of county government maybe disjointed. Would it be helpful if we do a land use decision that we just submit that to you, that something's changed on that parcel, and then you still are able to do whatever you're going to do? But how else? I mean, you have 106,000 parcels. You have 20 people. How are you going to pick up what this board did last week? I mean, does that make sense to, do you guys monitor what we do?
Chairman Holton, we're in the process of uploading the zoning codes from all the jurisdictions in Canyon County with the help of our guy in IT. And so that'll be in our assessment software package, and then also it will end up ultimately into our GIS environment, and then we'll be able to run reports on what changes each year.
Okay.
So we're gonna know at that point, and then it'll highlight.
So it is happening in a
way we go, yeah.
In the background. Okay, all right.
Mr. Commissioners, Brent, do you also, it sounds like you also pick those up through deeds, at least the administrative land divisions, when you're seeing those deeds?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that's where a lot of the slice and dicing, and that's where we'll have further conversations about admin divisions. I think also they do get the final plats. So final plats is another trigger. Like you said, that's kind of, final plats is right before you're going to see those things move. So they are getting those.
Okay.
I also, as a huge thanks, there's lots of times that the assessors will see things out in the field that looks odd. Maybe it's a building that they're like, this is a new building, or like something seems weird. And so that's why you're seeing more like code enforcement and building enforcement of buildings without permits, or, you know, just something that's off and odd. So we get a lot of those referrals and appreciate it, because sometimes, like I said, we've only got, you know, three code enforcement officers and three building inspectors. We don't always see that. So I think that's good. We are improving, I think, coordination of problems that have happened in the assessor's office based upon how a land division has occurred. So we try to communicate those. So that, I think we're getting better and better about it. We just don't always speak the same language when it comes back to what is agriculture, what isn't. As long as we're clear kind of which one we're working through, that we know.
Okay. Sounds good. All right.
Okay, Commissioner Van Beek, I found the wildlife code.
Okay.
So 63605, land use to protect wildlife and wildlife habitat. Looks like it went into effect January 1st, 2007.
Do we see much of that? Have you seen much where people have gone through this process of a conservation easement in Canyon? I know there's quite a few conservation easements in Ada. I'm wondering about in Canyon.
It's nothing that Greg or I are hands-on with. We have Holly in our office, tracks these every year, and she audits them and gets copies of the contracts when ownership changes, to see if, or if ownership transfers, to see if the new owner is going to continue the contract or if it expires. And then she makes adjustments at that point in time. So we might have 25, 30 of them.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Brent, I think that's a good place that we can also make sure that we're plugged into that, and we plug in parks, because as you mentioned, some of the work that they're doing for things, this is a good alignment of our GIS systems to make sure we're aware of it too.
Chairman, and as I read this, thank you for providing it, and this is a speed read through here, but this is for people, and you've been here long enough, that bird farm they had where this would protect that kind of habitat, right? Not necessarily riparian corridors.
It's a more in the nature of a confined feeding operation.
Okay.
Situation that's probably going to put it in a little different scope in our world.
Hmm. I'm just trying to think where this, because you have to have a conservation easement agreement, or you have to have that area designated. Maybe I'm not reading it correctly. I should take time to read through here before making any comments, but I don't read this and see that it would protect a corridor along the Boise River from development.
I don't think so.
Yeah, Commissioner Van Beek, I'm not.
Yeah, and Chairman, to your point, I'm surprised that people could get those wetland things maybe once they're identified, but I've seen them just belly dump right over the top of them. So.
Mr. Chair and Commissioners, we were just saying how much detail, but we can provide it later. Depending on where it is, for example, along the river, there are some of our requirements for noticing a fishing game or noticing other agencies that have the ability to come back and comment and talk about those types of things on the land use side, especially with like gravel pits will come up. So they get an ability and they're required to be able to submit certain things to Fish and Game that are the experts in what does this look like for wildlife protection or habitat. So on the land use side, there's some of that. That isn't what this is in terms of like a voluntary tax exemption protection. But it'll be picked up by Fish and Game if that noticing occurs, and you'll see those comments.
All right. What else?
Mr. Chair and Commissioners, it's really what questions you have. I think the only other kind of relative issue might be either discussion or asking Brian if there are parts of this code that seem to make sense for a land use perspective. Just reading through it and maybe having that direction, right? We're talking about taxation, but what does that mean in terms of actual use of the land and future use of the land? So that's the only dialogue. If you have any advice of what makes sense or like, hey, no, this is just taxes or that kind of discussion for us. We just wanted to be educated.
Yeah. So in our realm, the beauty of our assessments are January 1st of every year, the world changes again. So we're only looking to January 1st, what the status was January 1st. We're not locked into anything long term. So as the market goes up and down, you've all seen it here lately, skyrocket up and then stay flat up, you know, up and down a little bit. So we're not really looking long term at anything. So it's really what we're doing wouldn't lock in any long term information.
Chairman, can I ask a question for the assessor? I know you're involved every session with just looking at impacts of legislation and proposed legislation. Is there anything aside from, I guess, the profitability or the, I don't know how to say that. Is there anything in Idaho code that would need amended on this in order to make it more fair? And at the same time, before you answer, I'm going to say that a lot of legislators are heavily involved and active large-scale farmers, and so is that a conflict of interest?
Commissioner Marabig, that's a good question. But there's those same folks have also weighed in on some of the changes in these codes in recent years, so possibly not. They also voted for the ag protection areas to go through this year. I would be a fan of having minimum criteria that you have to commit to receive an ag exemption. I don't have a great win-loss record with my opinions lately. Down at the legislature, I was one of them that did make a comment or bring up a concern, and it got worse. So, but we did get, maybe I'm 50-50, but I would participate if there's an interest. Because it benefits, it involves you all as well, because if we deny an ag exemption, you know, on the over five stuff is primarily where we see it, it comes before you. As you all know, we don't bring things here that we agree with for you to a joint effort. I would definitely partner with you all if you wanted to undertake pushing something at the legislature.
And I appreciate your comments, and it wasn't meant to put you on the spot, but I have seen respect for your position on legislative issues, so thank you.
Appreciate that.
Well, I can see where some of the confusion comes and in the disparity of goals between the 5 acres above and the 5 acres below. They're two different standards, and I don't understand what their rationale is. It's not logical to me. But it makes it cumbersome when there's a land use before us and they're using the issue about whether they choose the word viable or not, whether they use the word profitable or not, or whether they use the word practical or not. I don't care what the adjective that they're going to use. It all boils down to me more or less to this area state code that's talking about taxes of whether it's, it really is a farming operation or it's a pretend thing. And so I guess we'll just learn to try to live within it. Take Zach's counsel about how we're going to make these definitions and do the best that we can.
Mr. Chair, Commissioners, and for Brian's comment, I think the couple of places that we can utilize here, one is the historical look back, right? We have the ability to say if we get a division, whether we use non-viable or not, how long has there been an approved ag exemption? Because there is quite a bit of work that goes into this. So that's one look, right? Even if it is talking about the 5 acres, that could be a delineation in our land use as well of how we handle divisions of 5 acres, because it could be consistent or not. The other issue is the definitions here, they're talking about ag production, not profitability, but production. Because the other state law, APA, refers back to this, this gives more good explanation and teeth to what ag production means than what we currently have. So I think there's some good things from here for consistency of what does that mean to be production that is quantifiable versus does it look, feel like it's ag. So, I don't know, Zach, if you have any other comments or commentary, but I think that at least gives us a direction of how we can get more consistency.
No, I agree. I'm looking particularly at those smaller divisions. I think there's a lot of history we can borrow here and language potentially to integrate those two to make them make sense.
I think that, you know, I'm to some extent, I'm personally frustrated because where we sit on this commission, we have to make land use decisions. And we had one just recently that was the 5 acres, and they literally were productive. They raised hay, they built it, they sold it, or they utilized it. And the whole concept is the preservation of agriculture, right? That's your global thing. So also property rights. So this person came in and they represented that they've had a good life. They're getting older, and they are not at the place in their life that they can choose to continue raising the hay crop. So they're going to carve off 3 for them and 2 acres they're going to sell. And this board had this preservation of agriculture umbrella above us, but down at the property rights level, they applied correctly. They applied to divide that to that, and we gave it to them because that's what the land application before this board met the criteria to be able to do that. But it's kind of, to me, it's a big farce that if the true overriding thing was the preservation of agriculture and that ground was very productive, then if you were following that, you would say to that applicant, not at this time. At this time, it shows that you've been very productive agriculturally and you don't get to do what you want to do with your land. So we live in this world of vying goals, and I'm not saying, I'm just putting the illustration out there that we have competing goals that really fly in the face of each other at times. And so if you think land use is simple, look into it a little bit deeper, and it's not so simple. Anything else? This has been very, for me, it's been very productive. It's going to be helpful for this commissioner when we're in land use hearings and you have one person stand in favor of the applicant, you have the other person stand against the applicant, and part of their discussion is productive farm ground.
Chairman, may I make a comment?
Yes.
And I support what you're saying. And to the public, where there is a recognized need to have the ordinances and development services updated. We don't have anyone in the audience actively listening, and wanting to participate at this level or fielding questions or anything like that, having the board field questions or development services. So I guess I would just say for those that are listening, this, it is a good process. It has been helpful and productive. As we look at the clerk's charge that will be coming out in the budget book on strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, I think one of the greatest threats to local government is to have an uninformed electorate that assumes a posture of just shooting from the keyboard without really understanding that there is a lot of information and time by government officials spent trying to determine what's the best for the future of Canyon County. That is frustrating. But as we get to the ordinance section of that, which is well noticed and a lengthy process, yeah, it is in the best interest, not driven by one of the members of the commission. It's got collaboration happening with offices and departments to make good decisions for the future of Canyon County. We've seen some lack in that area, and with our policy, that we're trying to rectify that, and that's the win in there. You have people working together to rectify that. So,
all right. Any other thoughts or closing statements? Okay. All right. So let's consider ourselves adjourned then for this morning, and we'll pick up later this afternoon.
Thank you, Chairman.
All right. Thank you.